Hi, everyone, and welcome to another episode of The Queer Quadrant, a podcast where we, two bisexual filmmakers, examine cinema in all its cultural contexts and explore why your favorite four-quadrant blockbuster is maybe not as straight as you think it is.
If they ever tell my story, Brooke,
yeah,
I want them, our listeners, to know that I walked with a giant. You were a giant.
Oh, thank you.
You know, men rise and fall like winter wheat, but you know, our names never die. Our names are etched in the history books like the Iliad. You know,
I don't really understand.
In our time, let them know that our listeners lived in the time of Hector, Brooke, Solomon.
Oh, thank you.
Tamer of horses. And let them say I lived in the time of Achilles. That's what I was building towards.
That was great.
Was the line, you.
Hector, that was fantastic. Tamer of horses.
He doesn't tame a single goddamn horse in this movie.
No, he doesn't.
He rides a lot of horses.
He
gets dragged by a horse.
Yeah, he gets dragged by a horse. Yes, okay. Real quick, can we get the most important spoiler out of the way?
That Achilles dies?
No, that Sean Bean survives.
Yes. That is shocking.
Yeah, Sean Bean survives in a David Benioff property.
It is shocking. You know, do you think that he was brought on for Game of Thrones because of this? Like the two of them maybe hit it off?
Probably.
I would imagine it had to have something. Because, like, I feel like of this cast, Sean Bean is the only one that you could grab for a fantasy show without them being like, fuck
like
you.
A big name. Yeah. Well, now, hey, you know, look, guys, we're forgetting. Orlando Bloom is in the hit Amazon fantasy show Carnival, right?
Carnival Row. Where he plays... Okay.
With Cara Delevingne.
He plays some man in a top hat. Because he doesn't have any powers, right? He's just like a normal human and she's a fairy.
Oh, you've actually seen some of it?
So.
I feel like I watched the trailer. Yeah. No. No, it's good. It's a steampunk fantasy. It's like magical realism.
True.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. Wow. Orlando Bloom is in this movie.
He is.
So...
The most obvious casting of all time.
We need to. I think it's actually important for us to discuss the casting of this movie because I think, look, at the end of the day, maybe this isn't a I'm not going to say my POV. This is just a hypothetical.
Okay.
Perchance, maybe this isn't my favorite movie of all time. Perchance, this isn't the queerest movie of all time. Maybe, you know, there are some historical inaccuracies here or there. But I have to say, this may be one of the best casted films of all time. I will go on the record saying that. It is so many hit makers before they popped. This is basically Bloom, right? It's his first thing essentially after Lord of the Rings, like which essentially brought
hand
him
in
to
hand
the screen.
With pirates.
Hand in hand with pirates, exactly.
But wait. Before
we
get into all of that, because I want the full rundown because it is fascinating.
It's insane, yes.
Let me just say, hello, I'm Brooke Solomon.
Hello, I am Jordan, son of... Odysseus Gustafson.
He does have a son.
I know he does.
Yeah,
I was trying
Telemachus.
To think. Yes, a classic character in
the Odyssey
hit, novel, The Odyssey by Homer.
And joining us today is Derek Aiello, writer, director, podcaster,
a king, a true king,
a legend among us, and we are talking 2004's. Troy.
Hello. Thank you for having me on the show today.
Thank you,
you know,
for
Derek,
being here.
Of all the warlords loved by the gods, you're my favorite.
Aww,
you're not the Achilles of the podcast.
Yeah.
I feel like I am the Achilles heel
in that
of
you're,
the podcast.
You're a giant
and that I
and
hold us back.
Hates you.
And that if you just shoot me in the ankle, everything falls apart.
No. But Jordan, that means that you come in when the podcast needs you most and you deliver every time.
Sure. Right. And I just am somewhat heterosexualized, right?
Yeah. I mean, that's on you. That's your business.
Why?
But wait.
We need to, can we go back to the casting? Okay,
casting,
cool. Thank you.
Casting.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. So as we were saying, Orlando Bloom, this goes hand in hand with essentially being his star vehicle. And I think what's very funny about this for his casting is that I think this is the most perfect type of casting for Bloom because I think this is who he is as a person and a character. Like, as an actor, like, he feels like a Paris. You know what I mean? Mm. He's like a little too pretty and you don't really necessarily believe that he can be like a great action star. And so when Paris is fighting and he gets beat up, you sort of believe how like... clumsy he is, and that he would like run away and like would be Aphrodite's favorite, you know, like that makes sense to me.
I think that he is, I mean, Peter O'Toole is like so
Peter O'Toole's
iconic.
The best piece of a casting in the movie,
but I think that Orlando Bloom is a very close second because he is just like so beautiful, and I think that he is one of the only movie stars that can sell the because I love her I would fight wars with her, and you're like, yeah, you fucking idiot. You would do that because
that's what he does in Pirates of the Caribbean.
But I'm obsessed with how it's like the puppy dog love of Pirates of the Caribbean mixed with the archery skills of Lord of the Rings.
And it's all pre-Elizabethtown.
Before he tries to staff himself with a bike
before he designs an egregious shoe.
Do you think that we've all seen Lord of the Rings here.
Yes, we have.
Do you? I feel like his archery skills in this look really bad. Like, he looks like he's a very poor archer. His form looks so different than it does in Lord of the Rings. Does that make sense?
Yes. Yeah. I mean, in
So
in Lord of the Rings, his form, like, if you notice, like, the bow is very upright.
Yes.
But in this, the bow is, like, basically horizontal.
Right.
And then also, like, they do this weird thing where they have him, like, lean forward every time he shoots an arrow.
Right.
And I think that that's just a product of the directing to differentiate the two.
The dynamic.
Because you can see him when he's like shooting the bow and arrow, like in his eyes, he's trying to be Legolas.
Was going to say, he literally has the exact same look in his eyes when he shoots those arrows that he does as
then,
Legolas.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then he's not. And so it's just this weird, like half iconic thing. But then... also, they like introduced that he can shoot the bow really well, like an hour and 45 minutes into the movie.
Because Apollo was supposed to guide his fucking arrow, but no. No.
Yeah.
No.
Settle. We'll get to the historic part.
We'll get to the gods. Yeah.
Okay. Next person.
Next person.
Eric Bana as Hector. I think the secret protagonist of the movie.
Yeah.
But I have to say, you look like you don't like Hector, Brooke. I think I actually liked Eric Bana in this movie. I feel like he at least knew who he was playing, because I feel like Hector is like kind of, you know, like this like stick in the mud sort
of
like
he's very a nothing boring.
Yeah, and Eric Bana, like, no offense to Eric Bana, but he like kind of does that for this movie. Like, he doesn't really pop, but like I guess that works for Hector, you know.
He's the most rational character in the entire movie, and Eric Bana like brings a sense of like there's a sort of poise that he has.
Yes,
he's
to the character.
Everyman.
Well,
so
it's so weird too, because this is he's in Black Hawk Down, and then basically Hollywood. It's one of our favorite things where Hollywood tries to make someone a star, because he goes from that to the Hulk, Troy, Munich, and that's within a span of 2001 to 2005.
Right.
Wow. With like ending with a Spielberg series movie where they're really trying to sell him as like, this is our next star.
He can do anything.
None of these movies pop. None of the movies like are financially viable for him. And then he like disappears for a few years. I mean, like, sure, he's like Henry Tudor and like The Other Boy and Girl and like some other things, but he's never really like been a thing, even though like he's like not necessarily a bad actor. Like, when you get like Munich, he's really good in, but it's just he never pops. Like, he does not, they just haven't given him a role where he is like the star.
He might be one of those people, you know how we talk about so often about like character actors stuck in a leading man's body. All they want to do is like have a role where they can do crazy stuff. But maybe like Eric Bana doesn't have that, where he just like is a leading man. So he really never does pop, because he just like is forced to do the boring stuff.
Right. He is the titular Dirty John in Dirty John.
Oh, great. That's so awesome. He is much more good looking than I feel like I pictured him in my mind in this. Maybe it's just this movie. You know, he's all tan. He's got a lot of hair.
Yes.
He's very good looking.
Yeah.
I don't know. I always thought he was kind of like a Weasley looking guy.
Brendan Gleeson, is he not your number one hottie in this movie?
Brendan Gleeson?
God.
Okay. The brilliance of the Brendan Gleeson, Brian Cox casting.
Yes. Iconic. Iconic casting. That's what I was going to,
what
I'm saying.
So similar.
Brian Cox in the pocket. Great.
In the pocket.
Okay. And then to round it out, just for our last big lead, because, well, I mean, Peter O'Toole, as we've mentioned already, slam dunk, A+, did great. But Diane Kruger as Helen, this is essentially like her big Hollywood debut.
Which I did not know. Did you know this, Derek? That this is like the movie that created her?
Mm-hmm. But then what also comes out the same year, Brooke Solomon.
National Treasure.
National Treasure.
Come on now.
I mean, our queen, Diane Kruger, really delivered a 2004 1-2 where one of them not good and the second one great, where she is Abigail Chase. But I feel like she also has the Eric Bana thing where she just never really pops in anything.
Except I think that she's actually quite good.
Well, she's a good actress, but she's I feel like Inglourious Bastard, she's like, you know, everyone like loves her and she's in all these great foreign movies and like Hollywood movies, but I don't feel like she ever got the chance to really shine like other people like her have, you know. Like I feel like she fits into like the Naomi Watts camp, but she didn't get her King Kong or something. But even then, Naomi Watts sort of disappeared. But you know what
Naomi
I mean?
Naomi Watts is like a little bit cursed in terms of the projects that she picks. I don't think it's her fault. It's just sort of like there is a decades-old curse that follows her from project to project where they're all the cursed to not exist.
The gods are following her?
Like her turning down Gone Girl to do Gypsy or like whatever that business was. Like stuff like that. I mean, look, I love Diane Kruger. I think that it's really cool that Wolfgang Petersen was like, no actress will be able to live up to Helen, so I'll just cast someone who nobody's ever seen before.
Which is smart.
Yeah.
Very smart. But yeah, no, I like her. I wish she was in better stuff. She was welcomed to Marwen.
She
lest
was.
We forget.
Oh my God, we all are so forgetting. Rose Byrne was also in this, who's great. Yep.
And this is her breakout too, right?
Yes.
Yep.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Because she's.
Well, she was.
I always think
she was in Star Wars.
Okay, but that's not a breakout.
Right, but she
was. We only know that she's in Star Wars because she's Rose Byrne.
Yes.
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 Yes. Oh, were you, was like little.
It's not like I had a crush on her at the time.
With little 13-year-old Jordan watching being like that one hand.
Not
going to
say that I have not loved Rose Byrne for all time and that my queen is now shining as a comedic star, but I'm very proud of her.
She's Australian, right? Or
yes.
She's Australian.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, there's
and that's
a lot
why
of Australians.
Yes.
Yeah.
On the cast. Mm-hmm. Also, Garrett Hedlund.
Right.
Yeah.
Garrett Hedlund.
Yeah, as Patroclus.
A little tiny baby.
He does not look like Garrett Hedlund today.
No.
I think it's his first, his first role.
That's
also
it
crazy.
Was like a month after he started auditioning in LA, got this.
Are you kidding me? Yeah. Wow, an actor's dream.
Mm-hmm. Is he an Australian too?
No.
He's a Brit.
He gives me like Texas vibes. All right. All right, I just found out. Yeah, he's from Minnesota.
Oh, he is?
Yeah.
Why did I think? I think it's because him and...
Orlando.
What's his name?
You got this,
the
queen.
Other guy who's in Triple Frontier with him. This is so embarrassing.
Oh. The one that looks exactly like him.
Yes.
Not,
this is so embarrassing.
Oscar Isaac. Pedro
Charlie
Pascal.
Hunnam.
Thank
Charlie
you.
Hunnam.
Yes.
I think it's because him and
King
Charlie
Arthur
Hunnam
himself.
Yes.
Yeah.
Are so linked
Charlie
in my
Hunnam.
Mind.
Wow.
I King love Arthur. Charlie Hunnam, actually.
We do have to say, though, that the guy who plays Ajax was the guy who plays Michael Myers in most of the Halloween movies, which is very cool.
Really?
Yes.
And the guy that plays that dude that Brad Pitt absolutely wastes in the beginning is Rictus Erectus from Mad Max
Bogaris.
Fury Road.
Yes.
Who was not a real dude, just some dude that they made up. But I was like, my king!
I was very excited.
Another Australian.
Oh, God. This is great.
Am I missing any more Australians? Brian Cox is like Irish, right?
Yes.
Or Welsh or something.
Yes.
Peter O'Toole is a Brit, I assume.
Brendan Gleeson.
Brendan Gleeson is also Irish or Scottish.
Yes.
Same with Sean Bean.
Mm-hmm. Sean Bean, right. Okay, yeah, and Diane Kruger is German, obviously. Doing a crazy good British accent in this.
Yeah.
The German slips in every once in a while, but it's like how the American slips into Brad Pitt. He, like, can't do his R's.
Brad Pitt did not want to be in this movie.
I mean, I wonder why.
He turned down the fountain, or left the fountain.
Left the fountain, yeah.
Yeah.
Which, I mean...
I mean, all things considered, like, Brad Pitt in this movie, it is... I mean, this came out a year before, like... Mr. and Mrs. Jones.
Mr. and Mrs. Smith.
Or Smith, not Jones. Yeah. And then this also is like the first time anyone saw like a star, I think, in the public eye do like a huge body transformation.
Because
he was like, you know, like a super skinny, like kind of mean guy.
Right.
Like in a kind of bad boy character.
So in his like Fight Club era.
Yeah. Fight Club and all that. And then he became like this, like he became like a Greek hero. He put on like an insane amount of muscle for the movie. Twice.
Right.
Because he got injured. He hurt his Achilles.
Did he actually?
It's
yes.
Hilariously.
Wait, when did he hurt
ironic.
His Achilles?
So the fight for Hector.
Yes.
He hurt his Achilles shooting that. So they had to take 9 months off.
Oh my God.
And then in the middle of that, the set got destroyed by a hurricane or something.
No.
So they had to rebuild the whole set.
Okay. You're Mr. Knowledge about this movie. I have a question. They built the horse, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
And the horse is still in Turkey at the site
that rules
of like where Troy was supposed to be. It was a gift to the Turkish government.
Okay.
Wow. Do you think there are secretly people hiding inside?
Why
that
would
the
Turkish
government
accept that?
Yeah, I'd be like, so, nice try, motherfucker. Right, like, I'm not falling for this again.
Like some voodoo. Like I don't want that bad energy in my house.
They were really advocating for the premiere to be in Turkey.
Whoa.
But they instead went and chose this museum in Berlin, I think, that has all a bunch of Trojan artifacts.
Oh, I wonder how they got there.
Yep. So.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Wild. This movie is just a fascinating, I think, as we've been mentioning with the casting, I just think it's a fascinating relic of the time. Like, it is the most 2004 sort of historical epic to epic. You know, like,
yes.
It is the sort of the distillation of what early 2000s epic filmmaking was.
And yeah. I miss it so much.
I mean, like, you know that those are so many extras that are just, like, running. There's, like, the I don't know if you guys saw, but there's a gif of, like, the guy falling when they're charging forward during when Melanus and Paris are fighting.
Oh, got you.
Mm-hmm. And they like go back and then they attack. There's a guy at the front lines who like trips and falls. And it's just like so emblematic of the time when you'd have so like hundreds of extras on set versus just, you know, CGI kind of goop.
Yeah. I mean, they don't make movies like that anymore. I mean, that was like, a lot, if you look at like the camera techniques and the CG they use, it's very reminiscent of Lord of the Rings.
Oh my God, yeah.
And just like all that wire cam, like they would never do wire cam.
Where it swoops over.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, like on that line, like that same shot where they're like, well, the two armies meet and there's that nice wire cam shot like going over the divide. They would never do that now. No. And unfortunately, let alone build a set out of plaster.
It does feel like Game of Thrones in a sense. Like, you kind of get like Battle of the Bastards vibes during some of these like fights, especially like the night ones, et cetera, you know, like the surprise attacks, et cetera.
You know, tactical warfare, right. Stuff like that.
It's a very good war movie, I would say. Not so much a drama or
the character
romance or it's a good war and action movie.
Yes.
What's your I was just asked what's your like relationship with this movie?
So I've always been a big fan of Greek mythology, and the first time I watched this movie was first time I watched it was with my at the time like 80-year-old grandmother. I watched the extended cut.
Oh my God.
With all the sex, violence, and gore.
Oh my God. Is there more sex in the extended cut?
Yes. It's basically like 20 minutes of sex and violence and gore, I'm pretty sure. But yeah, and so, and on top of that, the action scenes. We were talking about this a little bit in the beginning. The action scenes had a big influence on me as a filmmaker in terms of like the kinds of like sword fights and like just conflicts between two people that are so much more like that fight between Achilles and Hector. I mean, there's a reason why like a billion people have uploaded that clip to YouTube.
It's so good.
Yeah. Yes. It's one of the best action scenes of all time.
Oh, 100%.
You know, like I would even argue it might even be my favorite action scene of all time.
Derek, I almost agree with you. Yeah. So when Achilles fights our king from Mad Max Begaris in the beginning, when he runs up and stabs him through the shoulder.
Yeah.
That is my favorite action sword fight shot of all time.
When he like kick flips off the shield, essentially.
When he jumps in the air and like stabs him over his shoulder. Like, we'll tweet the gif. That had such a profound impact on me as like a 13-year-old wannabe filmmaker, where I like tried to like in my backyard have like a tried to shoot like a Greek like action movie with like gods and stuff, but like was specifically just to get like a shot like that. Like I would just like playing by myself would just like run and like do that jump because I was like thinking it's so cool.
So does this footage exist somewhere online? Maybe
I definitely have it on a hard drive. Will we upload it? No.
Okay.
Will there be a suspicious hard drive failure? We'll find out next time.
Oh, look, it's interesting. It's out the window. Wow.
It's on fire.
Oh my God. But no, that like that shot like lives rent free in my brain forever. Like it's just so cool, and like I bought a sword, like a lookalike sword from this movie. Like, loved this, like growing up as a kid. It was such a fun time back then.
And I mean, like, to do that same stunt today, they would do it in CG or with a wire instead of a what they probably did was a they might have done a springboard is my guess.
I wonder.
Because Brad Pitt very much like did most of his own stunts, particularly, as I'm sure you know, in the Achilles-Hector fight. Like, absolutely no stunt doubles. Yeah. Like, all of them.
We stand.
Did you hear about, like, the money bet that they had?
No.
Take it away, Derek.
You should take it away.
Oh, okay. So, apparently, Eric Bana and Brad Pitt were like, okay, we're going to make a gentleman's agreement during this fight since we're not using stunt doubles. Every time we hit each other, we'll have to pay. So, it was $50 for, like, a glancing blow and $100 for, like, a legitimate blow that shouldn't have happened. Brad Pitt had to pay Eric Bana $750. And Eric Bana had to pay...
Wait, can I guess? Can I guess?
Brad Pitt? Yeah, you're not going to, though.
I'm not going
to
get it?
You're not going to get it.
Oh, okay. No. I was going to say nothing.
Yeah, that's correct.
Oh, you got it. You got it. Wow. God.
Okay. The reasoning was, I was like, there's Eric Bana seems like he would be very smart and very professional about the way he throws punches. And Brad Pitt was just fucking going for
Brad
it.
Brad Pitt was seeing red.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. Great. I'm glad that I got that right.
You killed it. I didn't mean to cut off your confidence.
No,
like
no,
that.
No. I love that you did because it makes the win feel so much smarter.
Reverse psychology. You
that
almost
you're
got him.
Well, because I mean, you just look at the way that they fight and their characters, and that makes so much sense.
Yeah.
Like, we love when people play into their type.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Also, the sound design. The sound design of this movie is one of the best.
A little horrifying, especially during the sack of Troy.
Yep.
Very scary.
Very, yeah. It's terrifying. And it's also interesting, like, how Achilles's armor and sword and spear all have different sounds than everyone else's.
Right.
Cool.
So you can always pick Achilles out in big scenes.
I love that shot where it's, like, them doing their, like, shield wall. Mm-hmm. It's not the phalanx, because that's... Right. Roman, but like their little shield wall and like Achilles shield is special and it has all the little, you know, designs on it and it's right in the middle. I love that so much. I wish that, okay, so like traditionally Achilles is supposed to have all this golden armor.
I was just gonna say, Brooke, the armor in this is so wrong.
Boring.
Yeah.
Boring.
Also, like how characters die, I think, is very funny. Like, the armor is kind of ineffective.
Right.
Really.
The sword just punches right through their breastplate and stuff like that.
Yeah. Because a lot of it was bronze. Yeah. So, and bronze is a very weak metal. It soft. Cracks. It's soft. It breaks. So, that is a product of the time, unfortunately. But also, he's not wearing gold armor. I have issues with some of the production design choices.
Because
there's a lot of scenes where, like, Brad Pitt's wearing black. So-and-so is wearing black. They're in a black tent. It's nighttime. You can't see anything except for Brad Pitt's hair. And it's like, this is awkward.
Brad Pitt's hair was like, what if blonde, but blonder?
It is so horribly dyed. Yes, it is like they forgot, they bleached it and then forgot it that they needed to like bleach it again to make it look correct. It's like... corn yellow, where it should be, you know, like beautiful and Diane Kruger level of blonde.
If you just Photoshop Brad Pitt's head with the hair onto like a surfer, it's like
exactly
surfer hair.
How do you guys feel about Brad Pitt as Achilles in general? Because I feel like at the end of the day, this is an Achilles vehicle.
No.
And what?
I agree.
Oh, I thought you said no, and I was like, who do you think the vehicle is? No, so it's like other than it being a horse vehicle, like this is definitely a Achilles vehicle. And it all sort of rests on Pitt and his storyline. And I feel like it's not giving him the time or the story to necessarily make it work where then everything falls apart. Like you either have to have it be like a Paris and Helen thing or an Achilles thing or just like a very much more ensemble focused, but they really do... push the lens just on Achilles. Like he's the star, he's on all the posters, it's all about Brad,
right?
And then so like you get his story with Rose Byrne and that's sort of like the main emotional arc that we have, but it's not good.
Can you literally David Benioff, your days are fucking numbered. I swear to God.
You have him on a target and you throw darts at it every night?
Yeah. Every night, what lulls me to sleep is thinking about how one day I will have my revenge on this man. Okay. Like, Benioff, I swear to God. But watching this movie made me, like, realize a lot of things about Game of Thrones where I was like, oh, this makes sense. Oh, this makes sense. But it was, like, in the most unfortunate way.
Like what?
I mean, for example, the fact that Rose Byrne falls in love with Brad Pitt simply because he's the only man in camp who doesn't want to actively assault her.
Quick question. Do you think the women in this movie have a lot of agency?
No, I do fucking not. Okay. There's this one line near the beginning where I believe it's Brian Cox who's like, peace is for women and children. Women want peace. I don't want peace. I want revenge. I want chaos. I'm angry. I'm fired up. I'm also, for someone that knows a lot about Greek mythology, I'm really shit at pronunciations, so yes. I apologize. But the whole relationship between Achilles and Briseis is so horrible. Wrong. And unfortunate. Like, can we appreciate how he literally chokes her out, and then two scenes later, she's like, please don't
please
leave.
Please fuck me. Yeah.
I'll do anything. Yeah. What the fuck? What the fuck is that about?
You know what it is?
What the fuck is that about?
Do you know what it is? It's a real sack of wine.
It
is
a real sack of wine.
One of my favorite lines of all time.
One of the best lines.
But
it's trash.
Yeah. To that point, I think a lot of the romance scenes feel like reshoots to me. When you look at like how they're edited and you look at like their placement in the story, they feel incredibly out of place and like the actors don't know what they're doing. And the way they're cut, it's like cut to tweet. It's a lot of the editing in this film reminds me of Solo, a Star Wars story,
where it's like basically cut to make it seem like a cohesive whole, but you can just tell.
You can kind of tell, or just like the Justice League as well.
Exactly.
There's all these patches and holes where you can kind of tell, like, oh yeah, that line is not supposed to be there the way Brad Pitt's delivering it.
Mm.
But then they cut it, you know, across with another actor, and it's like, oh well, great. That's
it technically is a scene, but it doesn't feel like a scene.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. That's how almost all like the romance scenes feel.
Right. The Paris and Helen stuff too. It's like Orlando Bloom is trying his best, but I mean, I don't think David Benioff is very good at writing character or emotionality, particularly in this like epic lens, because you just don't, it's one of those classics, like we're telling you, the audience, that these characters like have a thing, or that like their love is undying, so you should believe it. And it's like, well, you can't just say that.
Look, obviously this is not the gay version of Troy that we deserve,
right?
Because it should be about Achilles and Patroclus. But when you introduce Achilles and Patroclus, and like if you just we're talking in a world in which like I can edit this movie and they don't say the word cousin 100 times and they don't even mention cousin, but the way that they talk and they flirt with each other in like the sequence is like the way that they're playing off each other. I believe their relationship, Garrett and Brad, way more than I do with like Orlando and Diane Kruger or anything. Like they have, Diane Kruger is giving us nothing to sell that relationship.
Like, I think that I don't think she is particularly bad in this movie. I don't think she's particularly good in this movie.
They just don't give her anything to do.
Right, that's
therefore,
the thing.
Like, she's not able to give anything. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Pretty much all the female roles are very static.
Yes. Obviously. Yeah.
You've seen the long version, as you already said. Like, does the extended director's cut give any more, like, depth to any of these storylines or arcs or characters? Or
from what I remember, not really.
Ah.
It's back in that classic era of director's cuts where it's basically just all the things they couldn't have in a theater.
Got you. So it just
more all the NC-17,
right.
more gore, more violence.
Yeah.
Which is
what
unfortunate.
Can you do?
But real quick on the whole nephew cousin thing, a lot of translations use nephew or cousin as a way of describing a close relationship between two men that is ambiguous.
Beautiful.
And that's just a translation thing that it's very up in the air, you know, like what these relationships were. Because in that time, like it was societally acceptable for an older man and a younger man to have a relationship like Achilles.
Right.
And Patroclus, which there's discrepancies on how old Patroclus is. Sometimes he's older, sometimes he's younger. Different versions of the telling of Troy change it, but Plato believed it was the ideal model for romance.
Plato woke king?
Yeah.
Can we just say, Brooke, do you hear that song?
What is it?
It's the Song of Achilles.
It's the Song of Achilles. Okay. All right. I've been waiting weeks for this.
I just threw you the key.
Thank you so much. Well, I just want to say, Derek, thank you for pointing that out, because I think we talked about it a couple weeks ago in our episode on The Eagle, another film which I know you are a big fan of.
Oh, I love The Eagle.
You do? Okay, interesting.
Like 60 times.
Where does The Eagle compare to this?
Ooh, The Eagle's a way better movie.
Okay. Good to know.
That's a movie that like is about war, but like prioritizes the characters.
Yes, I wouldn't describe
it as like an epic, but it's much more effective.
That's an intimate movie.
It's very intimate. Yeah, it's just Channing Tatum and Jamie Bell and their relationship as they grow closer and closer and closer after being enemies. Mm-hmm. Like
enemies to lovers.
Yeah. Derek, I have to ask, do you ship it?
Yeah, I could ship it. Okay. I mean, they left it open for a sequel. Mm-hmm. They didn't use the alternate ending where they ambiguously die. So, you know,
yeah,
I think it should have gotten a whole trilogy.
Oh, absolutely.
That would have been so great.
The Eagles.
Yeah.
The Eagler.
Mm-hmm.
The Eagle Returns. Yes. As the Eagle
They
flies.
Probably would have pulled a Road to El Dorado with it.
Oh, Derek.
Which might have been bad, but yeah.
No, Derek.
Or it would have been a beautiful mess.
Or it would have been
That's
great.
Everything I want. Derek, why did you just say that? That's so mean of you.
I want Jamie Bell to have his own franchise. Yeah. Okay.
Yes.
But rolling it back.
Yes, back to Troy.
Was that the Song of Achilles?
Yes.
Okay. So, yes. I think that, like, just in terms of the relationship between Patroclus and Achilles, as it exists in the text of the Iliad and interpretations of the text. First of all, I think whenever interpreting the classics, it is important to note that a lot of things end up being suppressed by nature of a little thing we like to call homophobia. I'm not saying that it's like decisively, explicitly like a romantic relationship, but I just think that that is an important factor to consider. Mm-hmm.
But like
about...
with Patroclus specifically, I think it is like one of those things because I think his relationship with Achilles is so throughout time been coded and or textually gay.
Yeah.
And that you have, when you just dig into him and like his relationship, like within the queer community, like he's such an icon and you literally just see that throughout history, like immediately, like once the Dark Ages and like religion and Christianity, you see the stripping away and the relationship dynamic between him and Achilles get more and more straight. And you just look at, like, I was Googling just art throughout time of Patroclus, and you literally can just see within the art that's being produced him getting straighter and straighter and straighter.
You mean how he's like a sexy twink in old art? Yes. And then, like, as it goes on, he's just like
a normal guy.
A normal guy. Right. But
a Garrett Hedlund, one may say.
There are so many, like, very, like, sexy, reclining, like, Renaissance level art pieces
like
of
nude.
Him. Yes. Oh, it's so good. Okay.
Yes.
Like, this is not just going to be, a quick little monologue for me. This is like a full discussion.
No,
there's so much to unpack.
Yes.
To start with, the relationship, I'm actually not starting with the Song of Achilles because that's like the most modern. So I was like, we should like take it down through the ages. Thank you.
That was like the Dark Ages.
Okay. Awesome. Yeah. So like the relationship between Achilles and Patroclus was like a huge inspiration to Alexander the Great in his relationship with his... main man. No, okay, but like once again, pronunciation problems up in this bitch. I don't know how to pronounce this guy's name.
It's
Hestephatian, something like that. I'm deeply sorry.
Hestephatian.
That might be it. Hestephatian. There we go. Kind of like Hephaestus, but not quite.
Not Jared Leto.
I am. So sorry to any classic scholars that are listening to this podcast. I just deeply apologize.
I would love if we had some... Look, if you're a classic scholar, full welcome to come on the pod.
Absolutely.
I would love.
We're going to talk about some more classics. Yes. But yeah, let's talk about how iconic their love is that it inspired like bisexual legend Alexander
Absolutely.
The Great.
Absolutely.
Now, there is a film about Alexander the Great that came out the exact same year as Troy. It's called Alexander. It stars Colin Farrell and Jared Leto.
And it did not do well.
No, it did not. But, Derek, you've seen this film, haven't you?
I have. I don't know if I've seen all of it because the director's cut is very long.
Yeah, it's like 3:16.
Yeah. If not more, yeah.
It's been a while, but I do remember it very vividly. The battle scenes are good. The sex scenes are kind of weird. There's a lot of Jared Leto staring longingly after Alexander.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And Colin Farrell with blonde hair.
Why do they keep making these people blonde?
I don't know, but it's very weird to me.
It's whitewashy. Yeah,
I mean, look, Achilles, I understand he's like frequently described in the Iliad with like his beautiful golden locks and like his golden armor, and he is like the sun and all of this stuff. But like the dye job is just so bad that it looks very fake. Mm-hmm. But anyway, so that's the little piece on Achilles and Patroclus inspiring Alexander. We have to stan. And like throughout the years, there has been so many interpretations of like their relationship and like how it was likely romantic. And mm-hmm. I think it's like sort of been decided that in the Iliad, Patroclus was older than Achilles. So yes. It wasn't really like this weird sort of pseudo like older brother, younger brother relationship mm-hmm. that Troy 2004 tries to tell us that it is fake as fuck. Like I said, David Benioff.
She's coming
watch your
you.
Back. But
someone's going hunting.
The most important interpretation of the text yes. is Madeline Miller's 2011 novel, The Song of Achilles. Thank you. Derek, have you read this book?
No.
Well.
Gay.
Please tell me more.
I highly recommend.
Okay.
It's actually a very faithful interpretation of the Iliad, but it focuses on Achilles and Patroclus growing up together as childhood friends and then like falling in love with each other as Achilles trains to basically like be the greatest warrior of all time, like as a demigod. There's a lot of like inclusion of his mother, who's a sea goddess, and sort of like how Patroclus is like...
They actually have the gods in it, which is cool.
They mm-hmm. do, but honestly, and I'll circle this back to Troy the film, but like the Song of Achilles has my favorite interpretation of how gods interacted in the Trojan War, because like I understand why Troy is not Clash of the Titans. You don't yes. actually have gods on the battlefield. Mm-hmm. But in the Song of Achilles, it's like the gods are kind of there and they sort of interact very briefly as these like spectral like beings. And they're sort of like allusions to the gods being involved, but they don't directly interfere. They're not really like fighting side by side with the armies.
It's like pushes.
Yes. Yeah. Like there's an amazing when Achilles gets shot in his Achilles heel, it's like he looks up and he can see like the shadow of Apollo guiding Paris's bow to kill him and stuff like that. So it's like it's good shit. It's gotcha. Good shit.
It's I having not finished it, having been reading,
uh-huh.
I'm trying to finish. I wanted to finish for this, but I did not. But I have to say, it is truly like one of the most romantic things like I've ever read.
It's so beautiful.
Like early on, Miller is describing when like Patroclus goes to live with Achilles, because famously Patroclus kills someone and gets sent out.
Accidentally.
Accidentally, yes. You know, it just happens sometimes. But she's describing the way that Patroclus looks at Achilles and like sort of in like gay canon, like the sneaking glances in like this yearning and like pining for someone, and the way that I don't have it pulled up, like the way that she describes him sort of sneaking these glances at Achilles and right. like longing for these like stolen mm-hmm. moments when they are just like together, and the jealousy that he feels when he's not with him is like such a beautiful portrayal of like the early stages of like crushes and like falling in love with someone. Mm-hmm. It's mm-hmm. so beautiful and so gutting, because it is like a tragedy ultimately where yeah.
right.
Patroclus
oh, it's deeply
dies.
Sad.
Right. And then like they're reunited obviously in the afterlife.
Yes.
But like it's so beautiful, like the way that she sets up their relationship.
There are so many things that the book does that are pulled like directly from the Iliad text that people like haven't talked about before. Like there's this whole section, I don't know if it's technically in the Iliad or if it's like referenced in like another epic, but like Achilles was disguised as a girl for a period of time because like he's destined to be like this weapon of the gods, this great hero of Troy, and like his mother, Thetis, a naiad, or not really, a sea goddess, a nereid, technically. I don't know. Ignore me. But, like, she doesn't want him to go and fight. She doesn't want him to be, like, a tool of war. So she hides him in this faraway kingdom where he's disguised as a girl. And it's, like, there's so much about how Achilles is not this, like, Adonis-type Greek hero. Like, he's very pretty. He's sort of delicate. But he has this, like, amazing... like battlefield skill. It's not brute strength. Like it's mm-hmm. all like he's like I don't know, he's like a dancer. he just has this grace on the battlefield. So like, I think that that's really cool. And like, obviously not something that Troy does, because they're like, nah, it's Brad Pitt. Come on, muscles, let's go, rage. And I don't know, everything about like the Trojan War is very like beautiful and tragic. And the book is just written like poetry. The quotes, I mean, I could go on all day, but you know, there's so many references to like, I don't know, very classic ideas of like soulmates and like how the Greeks mm-hmm. think about like love and the afterlife. Like they talk about being half each other's souls from back, you know, the time when like all people had like two arms and two legs and like were separated. It's really, really beautiful. And so I think good. About it often.
It's just fucked up that we're not going to ever get that version on screen.
Okay. Let me tell you, yes. Last night I did a deep dive into book options for this because, Cersei, did you also do this?
Yes, we did the same thing.
Oh my God. Great. Why are we insane? So Cersei, Derek, which is Madeline Miller's follow-up book about like the Odyssey.
Right,
about,
yeah. I've been wanting to read that.
Oh, it's so good. I also have that. You can borrow all Wait, of my so Madeline
Miller is it just about Cersei?
Yeah, okay. But Odysseus makes a lot of appearances in it.
Cool.
But they're adapting that. Oh, I wonder that. Why. Yeah, because they've... They're fucking...
They do?
Yeah.
Odysseus.
Let's go. So there's like... they're making that book into an HBO series.
Right.
Chernin is doing it. And Endeavor Content.
Cool.
So I was like trying to figure out... I was like, all right, if that book got optioned and is like currently in series development, like where the fuck is Song of Achilles? And I looked up everything. The only thing that I could find is that it was optioned to the company that did Peaky Blinders back in 2015.
Yes.
And that's it.
Uh-huh.
So like the option has expired.
Right. Yes. Yes.
And it's not listed anywhere on like the professional websites. It's not on the studio system. It's not on IMDb Pro.
Yes. We're in the same boat.
Where's this fucking book option?
Brooke, I have a question.
Yeah.
Do you want to option it together?
So badly. You have no idea.
Should we just go in on it together?
It needs to be, yeah, like together we'll pay like $300,000. Right. We'll pay the option.
Yes.
Yeah.
I believe it.
You can come in with Great. Us.
Sure. Well, yes. Hell three ways. Yeah. You know, now it's $150,000.
I was
going to
say, you're saving. That's pocket change. Yeah. Chump change. Chump but change. Like, this should be, the Song of Achilles should be an 8-episode HBO
limited
miniseries.
Yes.
Yes.
100%.
And it should be the most beautiful and epic thing that's ever been put to screen. And it should win 50 million Emmys.
It should be like Portrait of a Lady on Fire, but for the actual Greek myths. You
and
know
it
what
could
I mean?
Be an epic is yes. the thing. Because yeah. so much of it is the war.
Totally.
Right. And it's like concentrated on the battlefield. So you wouldn't need to do all of the Troy stuff that happens in Troy. Like you wouldn't need like Paris and Helen are barely mentioned in the book because
we don't care about them.
And I think that Madeline Miller is smart because she was like, nobody can really live up to like the Paris and Helen love because it is mm-hmm. this sort of like weird archetypal like
this is also like did Paris just like kidnap Helen, you know,
like what's happening there?
Right. Yeah, I feel like there's a version of it where like he like asks Aphrodite to like make Helen fall in love with him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then it's like, oh, it's a love potion story. That's not great.
Not as great.
That's not very safe.
But it's like Romeo and Juliet. Like that type mm-hmm. of love is just very difficult to portray on screen because right. it has to be like so all consuming that when you actually try to make it believable, like it never works, which is why it doesn't really work in Troy. Mm-mm. Sorry about it.
No.
But I think the Song of Achilles would honestly be a doable adaptation. It's 100%. Not that long of a book. It's very easily split up. You can have a lot of like epic beach fighting. I would literally sell my soul to have it happen.
Which god would you sell it to?
I mean, if we were talking results, who's gonna get me the best results?
Athena's gonna come through for you, let's be real.
Yeah,
because she's smart, but she'll also like do some fighting for you. You know,
some battle strategy. Yeah, we have to stand.
I feel like she's the only one you can trust.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that is the end of my Song of Achilles tangent. I will say there is an awesome line, which I'm sure you guys remember, from the Achilles and Hector fight when Hector's like, "Hey, no matter what happens here, can you just make sure that the loser gets like proper funeral rites?" And Achilles says, "There are no bargains between lions and men."
Mm-hmm.
That line is from the Iliad and it's in the Song of Achilles, and they cut out the most epic part of the line, which is, "There are no bargains between lions and men. I will kill you and eat you raw."
Hot.
Hard wow. as hell. Cool. Hard as hell.
Cool.
Wow.
That's what this movie needed. This movie needed like a blade to cut through it. It needs like a tightening. You know what I mean? It needs that extra punch. Like it doesn't have
it's
the extra deliveries.
It's too long.
Yeah.
It's so long.
It really is.
So much of it is like weird courtroom politics that we don't yes. need. It feels much more Roman than it does Greek.
Yes.
It does.
To that point, though, the Trojans are the ancestors of the Romans.
Right.
Mm. But this is a film about Greeks right. fighting the Trojans. So,
you know, I think this goes to show us everything that we care. I mean, I, at least from my view of ancient mythology, where I stand Greek mythology over Roman, but it just, if we're taking that literally, it just goes to show that, you know, the Romans just don't have anything because the Trojans were just dumb from the get-go.
Yeah.
Trojans out here making terrible decisions left and right. Every single turn they take, they're just fucking dumb.
Is the phrase, okay, so I know the phrase don't look a gift horse in the mouth is technically about how you shouldn't look at like literal horses
right.
that you get as gifts in case their teeth are bad and that means that they're like not as good breeding stock, but like I just want to say that the Trojans maybe should have looked their
the
gift horse in the mouth because they would yeah. have found some Greeks lying in wait.
I have a question for you, Solomon.
Yeah.
Is this the world's second most iconic horse behind Spirit Stallion of the Cimarron? As you are our most noted expert on the fact.
I knew where it was going and it still
sorry.
Got
does
me.
It hurt?
Have you seen
the new trailer?
There's this I thought it was a series. It's a movie.
Oh.
There's a new Spirit Stallion of the Cimarron movie.
What?
Yeah.
Yes.
Featuring
Taylor
Swift's
music by Taylor Swift.
Wildest Dreams is the background, which is why I've seen every trailer because I'm trying
what?
To get a snippet
yes.
of her new re-recording. Because I'm a crazy person. It looks bad. And the horses don't talk.
No.
Or, like, maybe they
have
do.
Thoughts. No, they don't have thoughts.
They don't have thoughts.
My first question is, are they casting Native American actors in the film?
No.
Because the original
so.
Film did.
Really?
Yes.
Yes.
Aside from Matt Damon. No, this
well, yeah,
is actually,
well, I mean, yeah.
the reinterpretation is it's kind of like a south of the border type thing. So I think it's primarily a Latinx cast.
Mm. Interesting. Okay.
But the horses from the trailers, you know, don't like have thoughts.
Huh. Yeah. I mean,
it's how we're all trying to be 2021.
No
I mean,
thoughts.
Head
empty.
No thoughts.
You know, that just brings me back to the fact that Matt Damon almost had a big career in voice acting between Spirit and
mm-hmm.
Titan A.E.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we cannot forget Happy Feet 2.
Right.
With
oh, wow.
star
with
of Troy,
Pitt.
Brad Pitt. Yeah.
Brad Pitt's in Happy Feet 2?
Yes,
yes,
they're playing gay krill.
Yeah.
Wow.
Brad yes. Pitt and Matt Damon play Bill and Will, I
something.
Think.
Something
they are,
like
they
that,
are,
yes.
They are krill lovers.
It's insane.
Are we going to cover Happy Feet?
I think we are. Oh, okay. I think we are. Okay.
Just
to bring it back to this
bringing
movie.
Bringing it back.
Overall with Troy, how do we approach this? Because I think like the thing is, as we've sort of mentioned already, like it's chock full of historical inaccuracy. So is it best if we just go through the plot? Because I feel like it is fascinating some of the decisions that they do make. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, we probably should because they do.
It's like
it's
it, from the get-go, like they really are like, look, especially for historical text that's constantly being reinterpreted, right? Like there's, it's an epic. Obviously, like you didn't have gods floating on the battlefield or whatever, but like they're doing their best to make like a grounded version, but they are really just like throwing choices out the window.
A lot of choices.
Yeah.
Because I mean, like technically Helen was from Sparta, right?
Yes.
Just like from the beginning, just to get there before she's even captured, she says like she's not from Sparta, but like, honey, you were from Sparta.
Yeah.
And like Malinus married you to like become a king.
Mm-hmm.
Stuff like
so,
that.
So
yeah.
Do
you have some thoughts
have
about
thoughts?
This?
Yeah.
You seem like your
you
mind
like you're
is
ruminating.
Churning.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like the difficulty when you try and cut out mythology to make it more historical when it's a Greek myth, you kind of do a lot of disservice to the fact that it's very important that there are gods
yes.
in all of this. And I think that for me, a lot of the big inaccuracies come from like, they make no mention of like Achilles being dipped in the river Styx.
No.
Mm-hmm.
I think like the one thing that they do is they have Achilles desecrate the statue and temple of Apollo, which is, you know, supposedly what curses him.
Yes.
I gotta say, kind of hard. I kind of thought that was cool.
When he chops the head off.
When he cuts the head off
the
statue. Yeah, it's kind of badass.
Yeah, it's great.
Sorry.
It's great. He's standing there. He holds his sword up and everyone cheers his name. And it's a little bit reminiscent of of, you know, certain types of media from the 40s.
Propaganda, baby. Yeah. And then he literally beheads a god.
Well, I mean, it is interesting coming from like a director, you know, who did like a lot of World War II movies, like Wolfgang Peterson, like doing Das Boot and stuff. So that is a very cool connection you just made there.
Yeah. I mean, they cut out Hercules. We forgot Hercules was in the Trojan War.
Right.
For like a hot sec before he disappeared. He does that a lot.
Mm-hmm.
He just... He's there and then he's... Oh, he's gone!
He shows up and then bounces. I feel like he's in Song of Achilles where Patroclus is like, oh, this warrior showed up for a day.
He like
and
mentions
then
him.
He left. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I mean... I totally agree with you on the gods front because, like you said, so much of the action is meant to be, you know, put forth because of godly interference. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying that there needs to be like a whole subplot of like the gods deciding who should interfere where and who is whose favorite, but I think that the movie suffers as a result because the decisions that people make feel ridiculous, and a lot of it feels like chance when it's supposed to feel like fate. And the monologue that you said at the beginning, Jordan, and all of this idea that like we will live on forever, like this is like the greatest battle that will ever happen, and it's like, yeah, the greatest battle that will ever happen went the way it went because a bunch of people made seemingly random decisions and got lucky,
and this was a 10-year war also, like it just went on for a long fucking time. If we're like being real, like this is like a 4-day battle, right?
Kind of 3-day. Well, if you have the 12 days in between,
that's when they build the horse,
right.
But it's still incredibly compressed,
so quick.
Yeah.
And
technically Achilles doesn't die in the Iliad.
Yes,
right, because the Iliad ends with what is the Iliad
Hector and Achilles's fight, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, because like the sacking of Troy is notably not a part of it, which I think is fascinating that he put it in there. And it's really, I don't know about how you guys feel, because I feel like the movie's lacking really a protagonist and antagonist. And even though they position Brian Cox, Agamemnon, as the villain of the movie, because he is really, I guess, like manipulative and like is a bad guy. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Serial abuser.
Right, right. But then you have Achilles on his team and you have Sean Bean as Odysseus. And so you're kind of rooting for them. But then they also kind of want you to root for Hector and Helen and Paris. So when the sack of Troy then happens and you have like such violence and anger and like the, you know, the pillaging and the raping and all that stuff happening, you're immediately like, oh, like, fuck the Greeks, like this was terrible.
Right.
But it hasn't given you like enough emotional perspective to like also sympathize with the Trojans or like with the Greeks. So it just feels like it's just showing you like darkness for dark's sake without like actually like having a point of it. It's like really trying to be like, look how terrible like this thing was that they destroyed this city, which is like, sure. But it's also not positioning like any characters in a way where it's actually like giving you emotional depth or like stakes to it. Does that make sense?
I totally agree. There's weirdly like too much character building to make this movie feel like a pure war epic.
Right.
Right.
Like there's weirdly too many scenes of like, you know, Hector crying to Andromache in his bedroom being like, oh, the future of Troy. Or Achilles doing the same thing in his tent.
Right.
With Bryce. Briseis. Oh my god, I can't. Every time I think I have it, Briseis. Every time I think I have it, I lose it. I've never been able to do it. But yeah, there's like where if you just focused on this as like war. It's just war. It's all war. It's like a, you know, a modern war movie. Maybe it would have been more effective.
Yeah, it's it's one of those movies where it probably could have been a series. Like if it was a series, they could have developed all these characters, but at the same time, like there's just a lot of like, it's dark and we're subverting tropes and it's very Game of Thrones and it's very like, that doesn't necessarily, just because you subvert a trope doesn't mean that's satisfying,
right?
Just because you subvert my expectations,
play into the trope.
They Benioff should have taken that lesson in 2004 before it came back to bite him in the ass in 2019.
Oh, what do you mean? The final season of Game of Thrones was a letdown?
I mean, subverting tropes doesn't always make for a satisfying ending.
Yeah.
No.
Am I right, ladies?
Oof. Well, you know, on Game of Thrones, if they had done what was classically expected, that would have subverted all of Game of Thrones.
Exactly.
Right. Ultimate subverting of tropes.
Yes.
But hey, you know.
What would you have... So if you're like... For you, Derek, what would you have done, as you were sort of mentioning, I was going to ask you during this with the God portion, but like, what do you feel is sort of the best version of this movie?
So the best version of this movie. I feel like the best version of Troy as a whole has to be either from the Trojan perspective or from the Greek perspective. I don't think you can do both.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because doing both creates all, like we're saying, like all these courtroom meetings, all these talking scenes, all these long scenes where you don't know why we should care about these characters. And so I think by leaning into one or the other, then you can kind of bring back in the whole, like, on the Trojan side, there's the whole, like, oh, it's a good omen, we should attack them at sunrise. And Hector's like, no, that's a bad idea. You know? Mm-hmm. You can kind of play more into that of, like, there is the gods leading them a certain way and humanity fighting against that. And I think that that's an important thing as well, because it's like, you know, Achilles is okay with dying, but there is certainly that sort of tug and pull of he knows he's going to die, but at the same time, he's probably going to fight and try not to die. And so creating that sort of arc there gives Achilles more of a direct line versus a romance.
What we get.
Yeah. There is... It's interesting that you mentioned that. There is a series. It's like British American. It's not very
on Netflix,
known.
Right?
Troy, Fall of a City.
Yeah.
Have either of you seen?
I have not seen, but I have heard a lot of it because there's like a little bit of the Patroclus Achilles business in it. Mm-hmm. It's still not like amazing, apparently. So I've been meaning to watch that, but I looked it up and it was like, yeah, it's only in like one episode and it's like episode number 7. And I was like, Is it worth it? But the gods are like very distinctively included and it's like entirely from the Greek perspective, like Troy is not included that much,
which I think is probably the better way to go about it.
You were saying, and also the actor that plays Achilles is a black man of Italian descent.
That's
very
cool.
David Giassi, very cool. And another black actor plays Zeus, so it's like I think it's like a very interesting...
They're updating it.
Interpretation.
Yeah, they're updating it.
It is very, apparently, like, very war-based and kind of like a classic, like, you know, epic series.
Yes. Yeah. I'm glad that you brought that up, because when you brought up the note of, like, whitewashing Greek myths, when this show was cast, people were flipping out. Mm-hmm. And I think it's very important to acknowledge that we have no idea, like, what any of these people looked like.
Right.
And that it's up to interpretation. And I think it is important, because back then, the world was probably more inclusive and accepting than it is today in a lot of ways.
Right.
So
the whole geography of Homer's, like, this time period, the way it's described, is so different than what people, like, assume.
Yeah.
Like, Troy is in Turkey, as we were saying. Like, people think that, like, it's just, like, another, like, it's, like, next to Athens, but, like, no.
Yeah.
It's across the Aegean.
Right, exactly. Yeah. And, like, there's, like, certain cities, like, have disappeared from, like, time that were in, like, these stories. So you don't actually have a clear understanding of, like, where geography was and like where these cities were. Like, yes, some of them are exactly where they were, but like other of them, like, you can do your work to figure it out, but it's like you don't know necessarily like who was living there or what these stories were, and like they're all based on these things and things that have passed down through time, you know what I mean? Like, there was, like, you know, the destruction of Troy, but we don't know necessarily, like, you know, it's just, it's very up in the air.
Yeah.
We don't really know if the Battle of Troy, like, happened way that the Iliad says that it happened.
Like, Apollo, maybe Homie didn't come down. Maybe it was Poseidon. We don't know.
Yeah. Poseidon really guiding an arrow.
Yeah, he
since
came
we all
from
know
the
that's
sea.
His strong
yeah, yeah,
suit.
Yeah.
Yeah. And a lot of Greek myths are very, like, anglicized.
For sure.
And Christianized, you know? And
well, like, it's like you look at Clash of the Titans, and it's like Zeus is, like, sort of portrayed in a very Jesus godlike way, like the armor that he has and the way that they shoot him and everything. It's like they are like these white deities versus sort of, you know, a display of like the diversity of these peoples.
And
like, I mean, we mentioned production design like a little bit earlier. The only like vaguely Turkish element that they include is like the priests of Apollo are like Turkish styled and like their costuming, and then the rest of the Trojans are, I don't know, brunettes.
Right.
Like, there's no, like, there's not a single person of color in this fucking movie.
No.
I know it was 2004. Like, I'm not gonna go too hard, but like, come on, people.
Speaking of that, I was watching a stunt featurette where I learned that. And I was like, wow, this is weird. They had like 800 extras, 500 of which were Mexican. The other 300 were imported Bulgarians. So the Greeks would look more Anglo-Saxon.
Oh my God.
That was their reasoning. Yeah. So they would interdisperse them among the extras.
Wow.
Yeah. So they like consciously wanted the Greeks to look Anglo-Saxon. Like, yeah.
Right. I mean, yeah. It is like that whole, all of the big like Greek people are very blonde, like mm-hmm. from Achilles, obviously with his horrible dye job, to like mm-hmm. Patroclus is like a blondie with blue eyes, and Helen, who is supposed to be like, you know, Greek from Sparta, mm-hmm. is like the epitome.
Right.
Like Diane Kruger is like so.
I mean, you could have a commentary, I guess, like us on colonialism from Agamemnon's POV if you want.
But
there's no. But no, that's what I'm saying. It's like there's just, that's non-existent at all.
Like, absolutely not. A mess. A whole mess. Mm-hmm. I mean, look, let's run through some of the bigger historical discrepancies.
Beautiful.
And by historical discrepancies, we mean like Iliad discrepancies.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
All right. First up, let's see what technically happens first. That's like
Helen,
not correct.
Helen
being from
Helen,
Sparta.
That them getting taken. I think in the movie, the biggest first thing is the death of Melanus. I think like very early on, Brendan Gleeson challenges Paris to a fight. Paris loses.
Right.
And in the Iliad, Melanus goes back, survives the war, and lives with Helen in Sparta. Mm-hmm. And like they have an unhappy marriage, maybe like wildlife, you know.
Mm-hmm.
In this, Hector kills him, stabbing him through the chest because he wants to keep fighting.
Nice sword through the chest.
Right.
Yeah.
Which immediately is like interesting. Was not expecting that because mm-hmm. I totally forgot that.
Mm-hmm. Maybe the only interesting change that they make, which is also inaccurate, is Briseis stabbing Agamemnon
in the neck.
Yep. In the neck with a little.
It is mostly like death,
girly
basically.
Dagger.
Yeah.
Which is cool. But he also lived, and there's a whole play about how his wife later poisoned him.
Cool.
Yeah.
Priam. I guess like there are some things that they changed with him. I did like the sequence though with him and Achilles.
That is the best scene in the movie besides the Hector Achilles fight, which
it's very weirdly edited, but yes, it's a great scene.
Like he's,
Peter O'Toole.
He's like, how do you think, like, how did you sneak down here? He's like, I know my country more than you like foreigners do. What do you think? I'm Peter O'Toole. I know I'm giving him a British accent here.
Well, he does have a British accent.
Does he in the movie?
Yeah.
Oh, great. Yeah. Perfect.
The accents are very inconsistent.
I was going to say, I don't even remember that.
Like there's Scottish accents, Irish accents, British accents, like slightly American accents.
I'm telling you, Brad Pitt cannot do the British R's every time he has a word with an R in it. It's just like full Texas
or wherever
he's from.
I love that.
Yeah.
But that is like such a great scene. I love like when it gets into like the spoils of war and like what is like the cost. And you know, like Priam gets to him and is like, look, like I just love my son. Can I please like take him back so his body's not like desecrated?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And he like relates to him because like he gets to the love that Achilles had for Patroclus, even though it was like pitched as family love, but like I like that it is about the love that the two had for each other, because it is really Patroclus like goes to fight for/as Achilles because he's like disappointed in him.
An interesting fact that they don't include in this movie is one that Achilles basically lends Patroclus his armor and is like, you can go lead the army, it's fine, just don't do anything stupid, don't do anything that I wouldn't do. And Patroclus
does.
But they also, I have no idea why they would cut this out. They cut out the part in the Iliad where after Patroclus dies, Achilles won't let them burn his body for like weeks on end because he keeps his dead body in his tent mourning over it and won't go outside. And then, you know, when Achilles later dies, requests that their ashes are mixed together in the same urn so that they can be together for eternity.
Wow. I did not know that.
I wanted to fucking die.
Hot.
Sad.
Let's not forget the scene where Brad Pitt cries over Eric Bana's body.
Yes. Mm.
As he wraps him up.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, I'll see you in the next life, brother.
Very weird.
Yeah, very weird. There's a connection there that like they kind of don't really build up to, that I feel like Brad Pitt was quoted saying that what he was trying to do, they weren't trying to let him do. Something like that.
Did he expound like any on like what he how he felt about this character?
I don't think he ever. I think that's what he left it at. And so my guess is he was trying to do something akin. I think he was trying to be a real stand for the interpretation of like the mythology and those relationships as we've been discussing.
Mm-hmm.
But the studio, of course, can't.
Said no
because it was 2004.
Yeah.
But
did you find, was there like, if you having watched these sort of behind the scenes things, were there any things that you really gleamed of like big note, like these sort of like, or like things that you wish or you saw that they were going for that didn't connect, or like what was like the information you got from these? Because I did not watch any BTS. I should have maybe, but
I mean, I think we covered some of it, like, you know, with like the stunts and the extras and interdispersing like Bulgarians.
So funny.
they did like a lot of like mixing of cultures to design the god statues and the production design, which I thought was interesting, but not necessarily like necessarily the best decision.
They're weirdly crude, the statues. Yes, they're like mud statues.
Yeah, they're more Mesopotamian than they are Greek.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And that's what I think confuses me, because mm-hmm. Mesopotamians were well before then.
Totally.
And then I think they were like, David Benioff was talking about like writing the movie and combining a lot of these elements and, you know, his decision to cut out the gods, which I very much disagree with. Overall, I don't think so. It's a very clean behind the scenes. It makes it look
polished.
Like the movie,
yeah,
you know, went off without a hitch despite all the things that probably happened along the way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, they just don't make epics this way anymore, and like, you know, obviously we all have our various issues with this movie, but I would love to see a production of this scale get off the ground again. What's sort of sad is that I think Game of Thrones was like the most recent thing that even though like obviously there's a lot of CGI involved there, they always made a very big deal out of like, we have these huge set pieces and like so many extras, and we're actually staging like the Battle of Winterfell and stuff.
But
like
it really took a while for them to build to that too, because like if you just look at the early seasons of Game of Thrones, they are pretty small. Like season one is very contained with like
a bunch of like little people.
Yeah, it's like skirmishes and like behind the scenes drama, you know.
No
it's
one really
like,
goes anywhere.
No, and it's like it really does take a while for them to build to these, like I feel like by the end, you know, by season three we're really getting the big stuff, and then by the end it's like every episode is like another big battle,
right?
But it you know, I wish that it did, as you were saying, like have that sense of scale more. Mm-hmm. Like I want that again, I guess, in our movies. But
and that's why I think like epic things should be moving in like a certain way to TV, because it feels like the blockbuster, like the studio film specifically, is like very CGI based and like so interested in covering their assets that like there's just, it's just too risky.
Yeah.
I think about Black Sails often, which is okay, as we all know, it is incredibly hard to shoot anything on water, which is why like things like pirate based movies or Master and Commander or what have you,
it's just so unfortunate,
are so rare. But like Black Sails is an incredibly like large you know, entirely pirate based show where they're on ships all the fucking time and they're
so
staging
cool
naval battles and stuff like that. And it's because like they have the ability to do it from a serious perspective, because they're kind of like hanging out in their corner over in the Caribbean, just like doing their thing. Like there's too much at stake for films to now have like this type of risk involved, which is so weird. It's so weird. It baffles me.
It's there has to be a guarantee of success, and that's unfortunate.
To make it a four quadrant film.
To make it a four quadrant film.
Do you hear that outside?
What is that?
Oh my God, a gift is being brought into this apartment right now. It's a gigantic Trojan horse.
Oh, that's so
great.
Wow, it's almost like I'm Trojan horsing this conversation for a bit. Isn't that weird?
In that, like, we were having a normal conversation and you're splitting the conversation
and then that Trojan horse all of a sudden comes in
to reveal a new thing.
Yes,
right in the middle of the episode.
Yes.
Okay, what's the thing that you're revealing?
So you said the word epic, Brooke.
Uh-huh.
And you know, epics are a type of historical movie, right?
They are.
So I have a game for you two today.
Yay!
I'm Trojan horsing in a game early because I thought it would be funny, because just like in... Well, it's really more in the back sort of third that this, the, really like the the final eighth that the Trojan horse comes in.
Jordan, this is funny, but you're making it less funny.
Okay, anyways. Okay, so Brooke and Derek, I have the top 15 highest grossing epics of all time. I just would like to say the only one from, or the closest one to today is 2007.
Wow.
Most these of them really were from the 1900s off. Or the early 2000s. So between the two of you, we'll go back and forth. We'll ping pong. Do you think you can guess? I'll see if you can guess the top five, then I'll tell you the rest.
The top five.
Top five.
Yes.
Okay. And if we guess incorrectly, will you tell us if it's in the top 15?
Yes. That's what I was planning.
Okay.
So, Derek, as our guest, feel free to lead off.
Well, I mean, Ben-Hur has to be up there.
Ben-Hur coming in at number five with $74 million, released November 1959.
Is this adjusted for inflation or no?
This maybe is. I don't know. I'm a Box Office Mojo, so hopefully it is.
Okay. So, technically, it's how Gone with the Wind is the highest.
It is?
It is. Okay, great.
You just said the number
one. I would say, is Gone with the Wind the number one?
Which is weird that Gone with the Wind is technically considered an epic. Even though I get that it's an epic, I don't think it's an epic compared to the rest of these. So, I'll give you it. But fine.
I mean, it's the number one.
It's the number one, yes, with $189 million. Okay. Anyways, Derek, number next guess.
So we have numbers four through two now. Oh, goodness. Mm-hmm. I feel like saying Troy is a trick question, but I want to say, is it?
Is it?
I'm going to say Troy.
Troy, number three.
Hey!
With $133 million, released May 2004.
Okay.
Brooke, can you guess the next one?
Well, Gladiator.
Brooke, you are correct. That is number two with $187 million.
Oh my God, we're doing so good.
And can you guys guess the last one at number four?
I have a couple of guesses, but I'm afraid. They're old. I feel like it's probably an old one.
It has to be an old one because... Yeah. I can't think of any that have come out in recent besides The Eagle. And
which made $0 and $0.00.
Well, now that there's Gone with the Wind, a part of me is like, now I'm like, oh God, is it a war epic?
It is
a war epic. Well,
every other one of these is a war epic.
And you mean modern war? Or no?
No. These are historic war epics.
Okay.
Now, I will say 300 is not on this list, which I think is interesting that they don't count 300 as an epic. But I will also agree because that feels much more like an action-adventure movie versus an epic.
Yeah.
Just because I feel like that could have been a guess. I didn't want that on the table.
Saving Private Ryan?
No. Ooh, no, no.
Good guess, though.
No, World War... No, I lied.
I was going to say... Lawrence of Arabia?
No.
Oh,
well, that's
my God.
On the list, but no.
But it's not number
You guys
four.
Are missing a big one. And can I just play an instrument?
Yes.
The bagpipes.
Mel Gibson, Braveheart.
Yeah.
Braveheart. Wow. Oh, yeah. No. Braveheart.
That's the number four spot. All right.
Okay.
Can you run down the rest of the list for us?
Yes. So, according to Box Office Mojo,
okay.
The genre. Epic.
Okay.
Number one, Gone with the Wind. Mm-hmm. Number two, Gladiator. Number three, Troy. Four, Braveheart. Five, Ben-Hur. Now we get fun. Number six, do you see me? I'm spreading the Red Sea because it's the Ten Commandments.
I was going
to
guess the Ten Commandments.
Wow. Number seven.
I would just like to say that's technically not a war epic. There's not a war involved. It is a biblical epic.
A biblical epic.
Yes. Biblical
proportions.
It is.
Okay, number seven. Oh, ow. I just got bit by a snake because it's Cleopatra, even though that's not how she died. Sorry.
The movie bombed, didn't it?
I guess so, but it's on this list.
Wow. I think that it was credited with being one of the movies that sort of killed the Hollywood epic.
Because it was so expensive.
Right.
Okay, but it still raked in the cash, but it was achingly expensive. Mm. Okay.
Number eight. The gates are opening to the kingdom of heaven.
Ooh, another Orlando Bloom flick.
Yes.
Wow, look at him go.
Orlando Ridley Scott joint, right?
Yup.
Yeah. Also Gladiator. Ridley Scott, yes. King of the epic.
Ridley Scott loves singles. He loves swords.
I really hope Gods and Exodus or whatever is not on this list.
It's not.
Okay, good.
Number nine, Mr. Lawrence of Arabia.
Okay.
Number 10. Okay, I actually don't know what this movie is called. The Robe?
The Robe?
The Robe?
Never heard of it.
What if there was a robe?
Is it old?
Yeah, it's from 1953.
The Robe.
The Robe.
Let's see. Do we think this is another biblical epic?
Probably. Number 11, Sir Alexander. Number 12, the remake of Ben-Hur.
Really? That hurts.
Really?
I really am not sure how this is on. I think this is just like combining genres and like distilling everything. Number 13, The Mission. I don't know what that is. And then these two made like no money. This list I don't think is actually smart and like actual with the finances, yeah. Right? But we do have Spartacus on there. And the last one that closes out, I don't know because my internet just literally died.
I found the synopsis of The Robe. Would you like to hear what this movie is about? It's kind of bug nuts.
Is it about a robe?
Yeah, it is about a robe. What if there was a robe? From 1953, in this biblical epic, I was correct, okay. A drunk and disillusioned Roman, Marcellus, played by Richard Burton, wins Jesus's robe in a dice game after the crucifixion. He has never been a man of faith like his slave, Demetrius, played by Victor Mature. I doubt it. But when Demetrius escapes with the robe, Marcellus experiences disturbing visions and feels guilty for his actions. Convinced that destroying the robe will cure him, Marcellus sets out to find Demetrius and discovers his Christian faith along the way. That sounds actively terrible.
That's wild.
I'm shook. All right, and unfortunately, the last slot goes to The Last Legion.
I've never heard of
that. Wow.
2007 movie.
With Colin Firth, right?
Sure. You tell me.
Yeah, it's the King Arthur movie, isn't it?
It is Colin Firth, yes. Yes, with Ben Kingsley as Merlin.
Yep.
I don't think you would ever get this. The log line, as the Roman Empire crumbles, young Romulus Augustus flees the city and embarks on a perilous voyage to Britain to track down a legion of supporters.
Yeah.
Sure.
Came out 2005's King Arthur was based on the same discovery that was made, that King Arthur was actually Roman.
Thomas Brody Sangster is in this?
There's a lot of
people. Do you like 2005's King Arthur? I think that's an important conversation.
2005 King's Arthur.
This is the one with Keira Knightley, right?
Keira Knightley.
Where she has a bow and arrow.
She has a bow and arrow. It has
Clive Owen.
Clive Owen. King Arthur. Isn't Orlando Bloom in that as?
No.
No.
Who is Lancelot?
Lancelot? Oh.
All right. We need to. You know what? This is important.
Joel Edgerton's in this.
Yes. Who is Lancelot?
Okay, here we go. I got it. It's actually a 2004 joint, guys.
Same year.
Directed by Antoine Fuqua.
Oh my God. Yeah.
Are we ready for the cast?
Yes.
This is opening my third eye. Okay. Joel Egerton as Gawain. Hugh Dancy as Galahad.
Yes, bitch. Mads
Mikkelsen, our king, as, oh my God, his name just literally, Tristan.
Yes.
Okay.
And they have a bunch of scenes together, and that's how they met, and that is what inspired like their chemistry in Hannibal.
Iconic. Okay, Stephen Delane from Game of Thrones is Merlin. Lancelot is Eowyn. I never know how to pronounce his name. Ian.
Oh.
Gruffudd.
Oh.
Right?
Mr. Fantastic himself.
And also, this was me growing up. I watched the Horatio Hornblower series, which is a series of naval epics where he plays the titular Horatio Hornblower.
This seems like a Derek Aiello joint. Did you watch this?
I've never heard of this.
I don't know if they're good. I don't know how they hold up. But back in the day, me and my dad would watch those and like Master and Commander. Let me tell you, a real fun time. And they take place in like the 1800s. And I distinctly remember a scene where someone gets beheaded with a...
Guillotine.
Traumatized me for years. Would have nightmares that I was gonna die via guillotine.
Eat the rich, Jordan.
Get
it together.
But anyways, that was so. I feel like that's so emblematic that he was like the iconic Lancelot, like probably more coveted role than Arthur, and then he was Mr. Fantastic, and our king has been nowhere since.
Yeah.
Anyways,
God.
The early 2000s.
Before we wrap up all of this epic talk. Derek, I know you're an Eagles stan, and like we do, we appreciate that so much. Are there any undersung epics that you feel like you want to you want to tell our listeners about?
Undersung epics.
And may I just point out that all of the epics that we mentioned are extremely Eurocentric, but there's a lot of amazing
You're saying East there are Asian other stories out there?
And world cinema has a lot of really, really great epic pieces of film.
I don't recommend The Wall, starring Matt Damon.
And Pedro Pascal.
I don't recommend that. Let's see. In 2007, there was a Hercules miniseries with Sean Astin.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Oh?
It's really good.
Is he Hercules?
No.
Okay, I was going to say.
He plays, I think he plays like a bard, kind of like musical that character.
That makes a lot more sense.
But it's pretty good. It's almost Hercules in the 12 trials, but it's more like Hercules in the 4.5 trials.
Is this the one with Ryan Gosling? Or no?
No. That's Young Hercules, which is fun.
Whoa.
Ryan Gosling
You've never heard of this?
No.
Okay, so I get to nerd out about one of my favorite childhood shows of all time.
Do it.
So back in the 90s, Sam Raimi and Rob Tappert, who, you know, everyone knows Sam Raimi, but Rob Tappert also created Spartacus, of course, The Evil Dead, Darkman. They created a series of shows called Hercules, The Legendary Journeys, Xena Warrior Princess, and Young Hercules.
Okay, I know about Xena. I did not know about Young Hercules.
Yes, Young Hercules starring Ryan Gosling and Dino Gorman of Hobbit fame.
Wow.
Also featuring freaking Haldir from Lord of the Rings. He's in it.
Look at this.
One of the guys from Mortal Kombat's in it as Jason, King of Corinth.
I'm looking at photos right now, and I am aghast.
Yeah, they dyed his hair blonde, I'm pretty sure. They gave him a spray tan. He was 17.
Such a baby in this.
He was 17.
Wow, he has aged like the finest of wines.
Yeah, and he almost quit acting when the show got canceled.
Right?
What, is it good?
When it got canceled?
He's great in the show. Yeah, it got canceled. There were three shows that were competing for the number one slot on Fox Kids back in the day. Power Rangers, Young Hercules, and Mystic Knights of Tir-Nanog.
Which would you give it to?
Oh, Young Hercules.
Cool.
I mean, Young Hercules is like, I mean, I love Power Rangers. Power Rangers is immortal. It's never going to get canceled.
Right.
But here's the thing. They canceled Young Hercules, so Mystic Knights of Tir-Nanog could have this, like, the whatever slot. But then Mystic Knights of Tir-Nanog got canceled. Because it kind of sucked.
So then it just became Power Rangers?
So then there was no shows to fill like any of those slots. So it was just Power Rangers. They did 50 episodes, which you can watch for free, I think, on the internet. On Peacock or Hulu or something. Yeah.
What trials do they have him do?
So in the 2007 one, it's like Taming the Bull and stuff. But on the show...
Oh, sorry. Okay, yes.
On the show, it's all sorts of
marvelous mayhem?
Yeah, mayhem. It's just shenanigans. It's like everything you dream about. It's like, this week, they're at the academy, and oh my god, some thieves have locked everyone out, and they gotta break back into the school. This week, oh no, like, there's a cyclops threatening the tavern where they all hang out.
This week,
Ares has challenged Hercules to a singing contest, and they gotta find and win the Cronos Stone from him.
No, you're lying.
No, I'm completely serious. It's one of the best episodes of the entire season. Okay. They have a battle of the bands.
We are tweeting and finding that episode, because that must come back to
episode
life.
Episode, 41.
I love that you know this.
It's like...
This is iconic.
It's so good. Like, Hercules plays the lyre like an electric guitar. It's so great.
Did you like this more than Xena, or did you not watch Xena?
So I watched all three shows growing up. Mm-hmm. I think Young Hercules was, of course, like kid friendly. It's 20-minute episodes. It's just so wholesome. You know, when it's I would say it's like a 90, like it's akin to Avatar: The Last Airbender in terms of its hijinks.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So I would recommend.
That's a high bar.
Yeah. Xena and Herc, though, the other show, Hercules, Legendary Journeys. Yeah, there's some allusions to the fact that Hercules and Aeolus are an item, but it's never, you know, really explored. It's hinted at. I would say, like, on that show, all the guest stars they bring on, like, Bruce Campbell's in a lot of episodes.
Of course.
He plays Autolycus, the King of Thieves.
Cool.
And they got Anthony Quinn, if you know who he is. He plays Zeus for a number of episodes.
Sounds great.
Yeah. And, of course, Xena Warrior Princess, Lucy Lawless.
I mean, a great show.
The best. Talk about a show with some subtext.
Exactly. Yes. Xena Warrior Princess is arguably the best of all three, and arguably the most like impactful.
It's like had the longest impact.
It's very enduring.
Yes, yeah. And
I feel like I'll always, like, every couple months see like a Xena still or like an image come out from that show. Like, it feels very akin to Wonder Woman, you know, when that was like when Wonder Woman was hyping up. Like, I feel like a lot of people were talking about like Xena again, you know.
Yes, yeah. There's been so many talks of a reboot for years, and I don't know if it'll ever happen, but it's one of those things where I think it would be hard to capture that sort of 90s campness, but...
That's why it's so good.
What I will say, all these shows, without their existence, there would be no Lord of the Rings.
It's true.
Because all the stunt teams, Richard Taylor from Weta Workshop, they all got their start on these shows, making props, costumes, doing stunts. and patterning their stunt style off of like Hong Kong like stunt teams.
God, so fucking
so the
cool.
wire work in New Zealand is incredible. These are all New Zealand shows.
Right.
Lots of New Zealand actors, and they picked Southern California as the most universal American accent.
Hmm.
So all the New Zealand actors had to learn how to do a Southern California accent.
Hey,
so
dude, weird. You want to go fight some monsters?
Yeah.
Bro, let's radical.
You want to shred the gnar today?
Yeah.
Dude?
Oh, yeah. There's so many scenes like that where like someone's like, hey, I just discovered like hitting waves with a piece of wood is like so much fun.
Oh no.
And there's a character like named Falafel, which I don't know how well that's aged.
Ooh, don't know
but
about
he
that
like
one.
He like has action figures that he sells. He has pizza that he sells. There's lots of gags. Like, they even do
I
an
like
episode
that.
In Big Bear where descendants of these characters go on a retreat to figure out how to break the next episode of Hercules, The Legendary Journeys.
Oh, so it's like meta.
It gets super meta.
Oh my God, this sounds so good.
This was like, I sent you this. Like, I loved animated shows back then where there was a Little Mermaid show, a Tarzan show, etc., where the characters would meet the authors of their novels.
Oh, yeah.
It's my favorite subgenre of animated show because I would watch mm-hmm. I watched the Tarzan one growing up. And like, they meet, oh my God, who wrote Tarzan? Why am I blanking?
Edgar Rice? No. Yeah. Edgar Rice Burroughs.
Yes. Yes. And it's like the episode's like probably called that, but it's like they just like meet this guy and he goes on his way. He was like lost at sea, you know, mm-hmm. meets Tarzan or whatever, and then goes to write the Tarzan novels.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
No,
or it's like, oh my God. It's just so deeply meta and so hilarious.
Do you guys want to hear a horrible example of a show that does this very well?
Yes.
Three guesses. Just kidding. I'm not going to make you guess. Supernatural is like shocking. Hugely meta for a
really?
Couple of seasons and that like the characters, like it was such a dedicated fan that the characters discover books have been written about them and it's like
oh
a way to bring
God.
In the fandom and like people know who they are in like a fandom sense.
Wow.
I'm obsessed with like deeply meta
I love
stuff.
That.
Okay.
That's so fun.
I'm so yeah. glad that you were able to talk about Young yeah. Kirk because I know mm-hmm. you're a fan.
I feel like there's a way for us to reboot Troy in a modern way. You know,
yes.
akin to these, right?
Oh, totally.
Yes, 100%. I think if you could do Troy on a smaller scale,
yes,
you could probably get away with doing like a TV show. Probably not a movie, like a $200 million movie. You probably
no.
couldn't, but maybe if you set the scale small, and you know, took out a lot of the battles, which is unfortunately why we watch Troy.
Most of
but,
us, yes.
Mm-hmm.
The good news is, though, I think you could too. The good news is about the Trojan War is that so many, obviously, like the way that Troy 2004 is pitched is that aside from the Achilles and Hector fight, there's so much like huge army fighting going on like behind the scenes and like around the central battles. But most of these central fights are just like a mana
one
and mana.
On ones, yeah.
It's a tete-a-tete.
Hector!
Exactly.
Hector!
Yeah, well, I guess so, yeah. So to that point, mm-hmm. it's like the battle can always be going on. It lasts for 10 years. And then you can kind of just...
You can focus on
yeah.
the spotlight
you can focus on,
battles.
Yeah, exactly.
They just keep smash cutting back and they're just still fighting. No one's moving or dying. They're just standing there exhausted. Yeah, like
sword.
Poking each other.
God
like,
damn it.
The stuntmen are all whiffing blows and it's
die.
Only on your like 10th watch that you
right.
notice they're not making contact.
Right.
Yeah,
all
exactly.
the swords bend.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's like the wobbly ones. Yeah,
suffice
yeah.
to say, all those like Young Herc, Xena, they all have rubber swords. So
oh,
the swords
yeah, the best.
Burn. It's great. But
yeah.
I don't think they used rubber swords. They probably used some rubber swords on Troy, but
mm-hmm.
they probably used aluminum swords.
Mm.
There's a lot. I think like obviously the armor and stuff is very cool. Mm-hmm. I know we've mentioned costume design a couple times, but apparently the costume design is actually pretty inaccurate, all things given. They put the Trojans in some weird tie-dye.
Yes.
I've noticed.
Their armor is just very, it's like everyone has sort of special armor.
Right.
But it would only be like one person in the army would like have that design. You know what I mean? Like how
yeah.
like sort of like flourished it is and like mm-hmm. how everyone has that. It would be like just Hector.
Right.
And then everyone else is like regular. Fitted
normal
yeah.
shit. I will say a great costume decision, maybe historically inaccurate, maybe not. I don't know who's to
yes,
say.
Yes.
There's so much ass in this movie.
There's a lot
yeah.
of tush.
All
yeah.
of these men have like mini skirts.
Yes.
Yep.
I'm a huge fan. There's like a lot of thigh action. I don't
oh,
know.
Big thigh movie.
Big thigh movie. It's mm-hmm. just, it's like if you're gonna have everyone get ripped as hell and fight in the sand in the sun, like all oiled up and sweaty for a year and a half, you might as well let them show off their hard work.
Well, I think that's where 300 like does like that movie like succeeds in like the sexualization of like the male body in that sense. Not like defending that movie at all or saying it's a great movie, but I just think that movie knows that like these movies or like these stories exist, or like people on screen want to see them because there is like a fetishization and like a love of like the perfect human form in war movies,
right?
Especially this type. And it's just like, okay, cool, they were shirtless, Brad Pitt was shirtless and hot, but what if everyone was shirtless and hot,
and we like had a lot of like good thigh and ass shots. I mean, my favorite look by far in this movie is when Brad Pitt is walking brooding along the sand before he decides to go to Troy, and he is literally in a skirt and a crop top.
I am same.
Yeah.
Unmatched.
Yeah. Why don't men wear, like, why isn't there more men's skirts designed? I kind of wish.
Well, I can tell you why, because the patriarchy and masculinity is so fragile.
Thanks.
Yes. I like a good skirt.
Yes.
I like a good skirt.
Yeah, Derek. Yeah. And like, I think we should really bring back the sort of like 80s short shorts.
Oh, I think short shorts are on the rise.
The Magnum PI style. Like, we need to bring that back into the cultural lexicon.
We do.
80s crop tops for men. Look, like, it all needs to come back.
I love a crop top.
I know you love a crop top.
We need crop tops back. Mm-hmm. I do wonder though why this look, like, I think the thing is, like, we've had this conversation a little bit before with the Eagle. But for being a movie set in an extremely homoerotic time, and for all these things that we were showing, like showing of the male body, this movie is weirdly not really that homoerotic.
Nope. It is unfortunately not at all.
Right? Yeah.
I think this movie is kind of neutered. It's like they're really pushing the Achilles sort of heterosexual angle. And by doing that, it's sort of like, in his relationship with Rose Byrne, that you don't actually get any of like the obsession with like other men. Like, his biggest thing is like, I guess, like with Patroclus a little,
well,
or
he
with
and Hector have a sort
little
of mutual respect,
right? And like Agamemnon, but he's just like mad at him, you know what I mean? But and there's not like any sort of like rivalry, and like Sean Bean doesn't really get a lot of screen time as like Odysseus, and they're just like, of course he's like cunning, but it's only cunning when he like comes up with the Trojan horse.
I have my tricks.
Right.
As he says.
As he says often, I have my tricks. Tricks.
I guess where I'm going to go for 10 years after this.
I'm so sorry to everyone listening for me making all those S noises.
No, it was great.
Double down
on
it.
ASMR.
But I will say, a friend of mine I was talking to this about before this, and they sent me some Letterboxd reviews of people that wrote.
Let's hear them.
2 stars from Ashley. I can excuse historical inaccuracies, but I draw the line at Achilles being straight.
Yes.
Truly.
Yes.
They made Achilles straight. Achilles.
Yes. Yep.
Yeah. Yes. Someone gave it 2 stars saying, I really thought Troy was the name of Brad Pitt's character until halfway through this movie. Even after finishing it, I still think his name is Troy, and I think you could say it's changed my mind.
That's the best review I've ever heard, because that's so true. Brad Pitt as Troy, Chad? Question mark?
Well, if you think about it, they don't say Patroclus' name or Patroclus' name like until like
he dies.
Yeah, like they say it. They say, like, this is my cousin. I don't know if they say his name, but they say it, like 60 minutes into the movie. They, like, there's, like, no names that are ever spoken. No. It's weird.
Yes. I love the Letterboxd reviews. Sometimes you go into the Letterboxd reviews of a movie, there's a lot of people, like, actually analyzing it, which is great, but not exactly amazing to rattle off. The reviews for this movie are a gift.
Yes, they are.
A gift. Feels like getting punched in the face with heterosexuality for over 2 hours.
Yes.
Patroclus and Achilles, we look like a couple. David Benioff, yeah, a couple of cousins.
Wow, is this the Lannister twins?
That's God.
Derek.
Have I cracked this case wide open?
Derek.
Benioff, you will answer for your crimes.
Derek.
This is the personal fave. Achilles, I want mine and Patroclus' ashes combined and buried in the same place so we can be together even in death. Troy, 2004. Yeah, sounds heterosexual. Like, truly, Truly.
It's so straight. Yeah. It's such a sack of wine.
It is such a sack of wine.
I wish I could just have that on repeat to play every time I'm angry at someone.
You sack of wine.
The delivery, the tone, the glare. It's so good. The head yank. It's like they cut a frame out.
Also, like, that should be, you know, this is film is rated R. That could be the time where he's like, yeah, you fuck. But no.
I don't think they even swear once.
No, they don't. Yeah, it's all like blood and gore. And there's also like, there are no boobs in the theatrical cut. There's like a little bit of ass.
Yeah,
shots.
It's not very rated R.
It's yeah.
So I even thought though it was PG-13 for the longest time.
But it's technically R, which is crazy. Yeah. It must be the blood and like all the stabby stab.
It's like, well, I mean, yeah, you see the knife like go or the sword going into like bodies and stuff like that, but it's in its blood, but it's not like gore or anything like that. It's just like violence. You know?
Patroclus's death is pretty. It's not like gory, but it is like traumatizing to watch because he's just kind of on the ground trying to breathe.
Right, he's like a young boy.
Poor baby.
Poor Garrett Hedlund. I do gotta say though, I love Ajax in this movie. Ajax, my king, coming out here swinging just a giant mallet or whatever that weapon is, just going to town on people. And also Ajax famously kills himself after the Trojan War because of the trauma that it inflicted on him versus him dying during the war.
Dying at Hector's hand.
Yes. Well, okay.
Mental health. And war. And like the masculinity and how like we can't talk about like war.
Our traumas.
Yeah, traumas. Ajax is like, wow, going back that far, they have a character representing that.
Should we have like a limited series about Ajax, like coping post Troy, like where he's just trying to come to terms with like his PTSD.
Yeah, that's so sad though, because then he dies.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Name one hero that was happy. You can't. Another None. Iconic Song of Achilles quote.
Okay, I do have a question for us though.
Yes.
In relation to the Iliad, Iliad or Troy, whichever you prefer. Who are our favorite heroes? Who are your guys, as one would say?
But like not specifically for the Iliad, just like in general,
Greek history, like Greek mythology, okay. Like so not like, gods. Gods excluded. Yeah, like I'm that like in
like,
the Iliad.
Perseus like, is on the table. Theseus is on the table.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Like who's the one you're going to? Like if you're going to battle for you know an ancient Greek
hero. Who is my guy?
Who's your guy?
Ooh. I have mine.
Yes.
Okay.
Weigh in.
Look, her story is not perfect, but Atalanta her is story. A fucking legend.
Inform our audience if they may not know.
Mm-hmm. Atalanta, she's on Xena and Herc.
Oh my God.
That's kind of cool.
Yeah. I'm sure because she's like the most famous female hero.
Like a bodybuilder.
Okay,
oh cool. My God, that's so sexy. Yeah.
I forget who, but it's a bodybuilder.
I love that.
Awesome.
I love to hear that. Yes, Atalanta is awesome. She was the greatest warrior of her time and could beat any man at anything, including foot races and spear throwing and stuff like that. However, in order to some man who I don't remember his name fell in love with her and talked to Aphrodite and was like, I need this girl, like you have to help me. And Atalanta was like, I will, you know, pledge myself to you if you can beat me in a race, knowing that no man would ever be able to beat her because she's a fucking legend. But Aphrodite gave this guy some golden apples, and like he dropped the golden apples and Atalanta was so taken with them that she stopped to pick them up along the race course, and like that's how she lost the race. So it's like, oh, blah blah blah, women being brought down by vanity, Aphrodite meddling in people's business once again. However, she's still a legend and we have to stand.
Yeah, you know, I would be there for an Atalanta movie.
Oh god, yeah.
I think that would be a better movie to write than a reboot of
whatever.
Sure, yeah.
Yeah.
Who's your pick?
Most
of these stories end very badly.
All terrible usually, yeah.
Yeah. And also just like, I don't know, there are some characters where it's like in some versions they do terrible things to women.
For sure.
Some versions they don't.
Absolutely. Most of them are all awful people.
Yeah, like Theseus is awful. Like yes, he saves the princess, but he also like assaults her.
Yeah.
Yep.
Not cool. Like, it's not cool. And I don't. It's complicated. I
agreed.
Okay.
Do you have a myth that you like the most?
A myth that I like the most.
Although I could feel something coming to light. I could see it.
Yeah.
So there's two things. One, I like modernizations in like a modern everyday context. So I would love to do Hercules in a modern everyday context.
We love.
I just like the idea of like Hercules being like some like asshole like bouncer that is super strong and then is overconfident and loses his strength and then has to like figure out what he's good at. You got this like hulking guy that's just completely lost.
This sounds nice.
Great.
Yeah, I like that. But I think a myth that I like, I mean, Percy Jackson doesn't count.
Oh, it should.
Okay, I really, Orpheus.
I was going to say Orpheus too.
Orpheus is good. And I mean, Hades Town, of course, is awesome.
Orpheus. I think it's a good Orpheus. Just a sweet boy.
Yeah.
He wants to play his instrument.
He just had to look back.
Yeah.
Yep. I think there's something there with Eurydice and Orpheus that hasn't been tapped into as much. And of like all the sort of myths, it's like nice.
It's aged very nicely in terms of like it is like a love story where a lot of the times these myths age and you're like, oh Jesus, ooh,
that was nothing about that.
But that one is just like it's like that's love. That's love right there.
Exactly. Yeah.
I'm with you.
I like that. Yeah.
Jordan.
Oh, Icarus for me.
Oh
no.
Icarus is my boy.
Oh my God.
I'm just kidding.
Okay.
No, I feel like I liked Orpheus. If we're just talking about this, I do think like Ajax is my homie. I love just like, I think it's just not like in terms of myths, like it's not my favorite myth or stories with him, but I just love a person who's just very tall and just has a very large weapon in warfare. Like I always love those characters in movies where they're just like, they just have like one big thing.
Big boy.
Yeah. You know what I mean? And that's kind of their character. And they're usually like just a supporting actor and they're usually nothing to them, but they always add so much fun to the story.
Yeah. That's.
But you got to shout out Pheidippides as my boy.
Okay. Very nice.
Of course I would.
Yeah. I mean, look, there's so much
Greek
with
mythology.
Greek mythology, but I feel like we did a pretty good and comprehensive
absolutely
look at it. Do we want to
turn to
some other things?
Should we pull back our arrows?
Yes. You know, speaking of Letterboxd and all the iconic reviews that go with this movie, every episode, Jordan guesses the average Letterboxd rating. So Derek, you are welcome to hazard a guess if you would like to, but it is not required.
I'll do it.
Jordan, what do you got?
2.3 for me.
2.3.
Is that fine? 2.6.
Okay.
I'll go 2.6.
2.6.
I'm gonna go with a 3.1.
All right. Drum roll, please. Okay, never doing that again. The average for Troy is a 3.2.
Oh
wow.
You're very close. Most people give this film 3 stars. There are a shocking amount of 3.5 and 4 stars, which is extremely incorrect. I don't think this movie is good at all. I said it. It's not good. I don't like it.
That's so interesting because all the people who I'm like following have it at very low scores.
Maybe it's one of those things where like the Letterboxd locals are like, yes, a Greek epic. Wolfgang Peterson was supposed to do Gladiator, and this was like he turned down Gladiator, and so this was his chance to do Gladiator. So I'm very glad that worked out the way that it did.
I mean, Gladiator, a masterpiece.
Because it's a masterpiece, and I don't
since the Eagle episode, Brooke, I have watched Gladiator again for the first time in a while. What a humdinger of a movie.
I know. That's one of the ones where I don't understand people that don't like that movie where they're like, this was okay. I'm like, this is something that you can be like, this is like an amazing movie.
Right.
This
movie
is cinema.
Sure, it's
cinema.
Like the most base of emotions and tropes, but like it does it in such a good way.
Yeah, it's awesome.
It's also got a great cast.
When he throws the sword in the beginning to escape and it just like you go, you hear the like, great.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. I love that movie so much. All right. Well, that's the Letterboxd rating.
Anyways.
We are all entertained. Wait, the parallels between Achilles being like, is there no one else? Is there no one else?
And Russell
Crowe stand him being just like a huge egotist who is just like, I am the greatest fighter in the world. Mm-hmm. Come and get me.
Come and get it.
And, I mean, look, everyone does kind of like love Hercules. Everyone loves Achilles in this movie. They're all like kind of obsessed with him. They're
Lovable asshole.
Oh, he's like our hero, the strongest boy. We love him.
They can't win the war without him.
Yeah.
Go Achilles.
So this movie made a lot of money. It was super, super four quadrant, which is exciting as we like to talk about four quadrant movies here on this podcast. It opened Memorial Day weekend, 2004, in 3,411 theaters.
Oh.
it opened at number one, and opening weekend, it made the grand, or a amazing total of $46 million.
An epic
in
total.
Oh, there we go. A very epic total for opening day weekend.
Wow.
And domestically, it ended up at 133 mil, which inflated today is 196 mil. The production budget though was 150 million.
So Oh my God.
It did not make back its production budget domestically.
Internationally though.
Internationally, worldwide, this movie made $483 million in 2004 money. So
I mean, pretty good.
They covered themselves.
Studios kind of happened. It's opening all, like, that Memorial Day weekend was and still is sort of like such a pivotal spot.
Yeah, but like the worldwide box office was three times the production budget.
Huh, that's
like,
insane.
That's not that much. This was an expensive movie.
Yeah.
And it's probably why they don't make a ton of epics anymore. You just like, even if it's like, even if it opens number one, like with a bullet, you're still not making that much of a profit.
Like, they probably built everything. And like, I'm just trying to think. It's like, you can really see the scale of it.
And that's why it's so good.
Right.
But that's the box office rundown for you.
Oh my God. Wow.
Okay. Do we want to go around and say how we feel? Okay.
How it lands on the queer quadrant.
Yes. We are going to put forth our queer quadrant ratings on a scale of 1 to 5, how we think that this ranks. I can kick it off. One star.
Woof.
It is so rude for this film to take ancient Greece, one of the gayest places to ever exist, and make it this straighty McStraight fest full of nothing, and even go so far as to not only make the Achilles Patroclus thing platonic, but to make them family members and give them a weird age difference, so that we can't even be like, well, they tried, but they didn't try hard enough. No, they succeeded. It's weird. Nobody should ship them from this movie. No one should be picking up on anything in this interpretation, because it would be gross. And you know what? Simply for that, like I said, David Benioff, sleep lightly.
I love that take you have where you said that like one of the most like gay places in the world. I would love to like see the ranking. So it's like San Francisco in the 1960s, ancient Greece.
I would say, well, because ancient Greece, can we like put like the island of Sappho
I know.
Put the beaches of Troy. There's a lot of places.
We have to combine our brains one day and do like, we'll do a special one-off where we just like list top 10 like
top 10 gayest places throughout history. Let's see, Italy during the Renaissance era, Michelangelo's workshop specifically. It'll be a good
we
time.
We just list the coordinates of his workshop. Yeah, right. Like, find out for yourself.
Oh my
yourself.
God, and then we can go on like a pilgrimage to all the gay places. My God.
But this sounds like our Patreon in 13 years.
Absolutely.
Great. Can't wait.
All right. So that's what I have to say about that. One star.
I agree.
Jordan.
One star.
Oh.
No, actually, I just stabbed myself in the ankle because I said too high. Half star for
me. Wow.
This is like, honestly, look, this movie was very influential in me as a young filmmaker in terms of action that I wanted to do. I shan't lie. I loved the action scenes a lot, and rewatching them, most of them really do hold up. Like, it is very impressive, some of the cinematography work that they have going during the fight scenes. But to neuter Achilles in such a way and to make the most like straight version of this story is really, it's not like upsetting, it's just frustrating. It's the same thing. It's just disappointing, rather.
Mm-hmm. It is
disappointing. It's just because like I expected, even though I knew that Achilles was straight in this, just like subtext or just anything between other characters, just any, there's nothing. It's just go girl, give us nothing. And I mean, like, Patroclus, sure, like there's a little like flirtation between him and Achilles,
it's weird. It's upsetting.
Exactly. And so they just really do their most to, as we've talked about, like in a lot of these movies, in trying to make them straight, they have queer subtext, but this movie somehow succeeded in trying to make the movie straight and did.
It succeeded, unfortunately.
So, and I think it's obviously a product of its time, and there are other queer stories of this era. As we said, the Song of Achilles that are coming out, but just...
And Alexander, this, same year.
Exactly. But just like as this movie stands, it really just does not give any good representation at all.
You hate to see it.
You don't like to see it. So half star for me.
Okay.
And Achilles heel
All right. Derek, what do you think?
I agree with you, Brooke. One star. Mm-hmm. One star. Because like... And like to what you said, Jordan, the action scenes do hold up. If there's one thing about this movie that's good, it's the action scenes.
Hell yeah.
But yes, they kind of make being any sort of like queerness that is in the film is very much in the guise of like incest, which is not good.
Yep.
And it's not good. So Juden, yeah, it's just bad. It's bad. And I don't know, watching it for the first time since I was like 12, and watching it now, like 12 years later or 13 years later, geez, it's like, oh yeah. Yeah. This is rough.
It's unfortunate. This is rough.
I bet if we had a rip of the film, we could cut the film and I'll remove all those references and make it queer.
I bet we could do it. Unfortunately, we would have to cut the entirety of Rose Byrne from this movie. Yes,
literally. So many people get cut out of this movie.
Unfortunate.
It'd be a 3-minute movie.
Mm-hmm. But yeah. A risk that we have to take. Well, I think that's a worthy undertaking.
I think so.
All right.
Wow. We did it. We went back to Troy.
Mm-hmm.
We took the trip and left a horse.
For sure.
Yes.
Yeah. Now it's going to take us 10 years to get off of this podcast.
Oh. The sequel.
If we continue this way, we actually might. Derek, thank you so much.
Yeah.
For being
delight.
Here.
Thank you all for having me. It was a blast.
God. Of course. Is there anything you would like to plug?
Yeah. I do a podcast with my friend Dane. We talk a lot about Dungeons and Dragons and sometimes movies. We're getting ready to do Star Wars in May.
Oh, very exciting.
Fun. May the fourth be with you.
Yeah, may the fourth be with you. So that's exciting. Also, you can follow me on Letterboxd at Derek Aiello. I don't write reviews. I don't even rate movies. But you'll see how often I rewatch something, and that'll tell you how much I liked it.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen The Eagle like 50 times.
I love that.
I love it so much.
I love that for you.
There's so much to talk about with that movie. You know, it's a very good rewatchable thing. But no, yes, everyone should follow you and listen to the Dane and Derek show. It's a great time.
Yeah.
And you're always up to some amazing endeavor somewhere or other. Yeah. So I'm sure that we will have new things to talk about all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah. You can also find us on social media, on Twitter mainly. I'm at Brooke B. Solomon.
At Jordan H. Gus.
And we are together at Queer Quadrant. And you can find this podcast on Spotify, on Apple Podcasts, in a horse, or wherever you get your podcast.
Do you hear that thumping?
It's a horse cast.
We're playing from
horse cast.
It would be iconic if we had an episode where we podcasted from inside the Trojan horse.
Well, I mean,
to you live from inside the Trojan horse.
You can do
it's
some
the Queer Quadrant.
Some post magic, make that happen. Put some reverb on it.
Nope.
It's the Queer Quadrant.
Nope. Nope.
All right.
Nope.
Do you know what we're talking about next week?
What are we talking about next week?
We're smoking some aces, baby. going to a very different type of epic. You know, we're gonna get down and dirty with
some slum and villainy,
the Brits. We're gonna talk smoking aces, so tune
in. It's
gonna
be a very interesting watch.
Yes, it is. Tune in next week for that. All right,
Derek, have you seen?
I've not.
Interesting.
Lesbian Assassins is what
all that we know is Ben Affleck is in it and Ryan Reynolds is in it. And Lesbian Assassins. So I'm happy.
Yeah.
Cool.
It's like a weirdly good cast.
Yes.
I'm excited. I've never seen it.
We're going to the year 2006 or 7, I forgot.
Okay, so we're staying in the same zone.
Yeah.
Very nice, very nice.
And Brooke, instead of smoking some aces, do you have anything that you would like to leave our audience with? Not a horse. No horses.
No horses.
Famously, Brooke, you would usually leave people with a horse, but not today.
For sure. Well, I just wanted to really quickly defend my 1-star rating of this movie instead of half a star, because I think that the extra half star added comes from the absurd amount of guyliner. Bring guyliner back along with the skirts and the mini short shorts. Okay, I want to see guyliner 2021. I think we should do it.